Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. And I'm here today with Shelly Schaefer, the better half of the Schaefer family. We met in 1994 in college as juniors. She is an extremely gifted writer, organizer, mom, and wife. Little tidbit, she's 50% Russian, as her grandparents were 100% Russian. They met in work camps in Germany. So I don't know if we're going to go there or not, but it's a little tidbit that at least people should know. Shelly, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so we're gonna have fun with this. A little different interviewing my wife, but was looking forward to this. Give us a little background on yourself, specifically a little bit about where you grew up, where you went to school, and then a little bit of your career.
I am a Midwest girl at heart. My daddy spent his life in agriculture, grew up on a farm in southern Illinois where he met my mom. And my mother is an immigrant from Germany. We lived for the first half of my life, I always say, was in the Midwest. So we lived all over Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, moving about every 3 years just due to daddy's career. And on a whim, so to speak, he took a plunge and started his own company in Salt Lake City, Utah. So we moved over Christmas and when I was in fourth grade. So that was huge. We'd never seen mountains. I hadn't. Neither had my brother. It was quite an adventure headed out there. When we arrived, we spent 6 years in Utah. That was the longest I had lived anywhere. So life was quite different from the flat cornfields of the Midwest to the mountains. So we skied, we hiked, we completely engaged in what the mountains offered. Love that. The company didn't make it. It actually was supposed to go public on October of 1980, whenever that big crash happened. I don't know the exact dates.
87.
There we go. And so that changed everything for my parents. My dad took a new job in Boise, Idaho, and we moved there the summer before my junior year of high school. So having said that, the thought of moving and starting college somewhere new was not intriguing to me. So I went to Boise State University, the Blue Turf School, and I had a great couple years there, but didn't feel settled. And so had some friends out in Wheaton tell me that Wheaton College seemed like it would fit me well. So long story short, I ended up transferring there my junior year of high school, and our story begins. So that's basically the nugget there. What were the other questions?
So, and we won't go into our story other than to say we were great friends for the first 3 or 4 months.
Yes.
And then we played football one night with a bunch of friends out in the first snow. And I tackled you and I started to look at you slightly different. And from there, we ended up dating and then getting married. And then how long have we been married? Yeah. How long?
We got married in 1997.
So how many years is that? I'm asking you because I can never remember if it's 22 or 23.
23. Right? Just a little over 23. Let's go with that.
23 years. Awesome. What'd you major in? And then a little bit about your career.
I thought I wanted to be a school teacher. Figured out very quickly that I am not cut out to be an elementary school teacher. So I switched my major to English literature because I love words. I love books. I love all kinds of books. So I had a great career counselor at Wheaton who looked at me and said, hey, you're bringing in all these credits, we're transferring and all, but it just seems to me that you have a real passion for English literature. Why don't you just do that? And I thought, can I do that? That almost seemed too easy and too fun. I thought it had to be a lot of work, which it was, but it was just a blast focusing on that. I graduated with an English degree and ended up marrying you, which obviously has been the best choice of my life. It's also been a huge adventure. So with an English degree, you can be very flexible, which has bode well for our past with a lot of travel, a lot of demand from your career of different trips and what have you. Taking that with me, I've done some freelance writing, which was also a challenge. When I say I like all kinds of books and writing, quite honestly, I like the fluffier stuff. Not necessarily fluffy, but I love historical fiction, autobiographies, biographies, all of that. In the business world, that kind of writing, the straight up strategic stuff, is a bit of a challenge to me and a little dry. However, my first freelance job was with CNL, where you used to work. And that was a beautiful challenge, drawing out of me a realistic side, which is always an important piece to keep intact when you're writing. With that came the flexibility, like I've said. What I really found that I wanted to do was be a mom and a homemaker, which is not a word you hear too often these days, but I love homemaking. That is something that I always knew in the back of my head I wanted to do. I didn't know if I would have the opportunity to do that if I needed to work. And by the grace of God, I've had the gift of being able to be a full-time homemaker.
So how would you describe yourself in light of where you are at in your journey today?
In a massive transition, this is where I am. So we've spent, our kids are now almost 19 and 17. We have raised them. I have poured hours upon hours into our home, our family, of which I would do over in a heartbeat. I have loved. I will say as a side note that I have quickly learned, almost the day Ellie was born, that homemaking is a career in and of itself. It's not one where you view it as, oh, I don't have to work, so it's kind of time off and I get to just pamper myself. If you do it well and love it, it is a true career. It has been a transition time for me in that that type of work has slowed way down. Obviously, you raise your kids to be independent and you want them to be able to go off on their own. And so with that comes me letting go of the reins. I am able to blow the dust off a lot of, I wouldn't say necessarily extremely old ideas, but ideas I have tucked away in my heart and mind of things that I've wanted to write, things I've wanted to create. And now is that time to come back and relook at that, recreate, grow it, and put pen back to paper, so to speak. So it's an exciting time, but it is truly, it's not like we're done yet. I don't know if we're ever really done as far as family goes, but it is a great opportunity for me right now to rethink what I had thought I was going to be doing at the beginning of our marriage and going back to that and setting new goals and reengaging in that piece of my life that I do love.
As far as writing, just give us a quick overview of what you have been working on and then what you currently are working on as well.
I have this, and I cannot believe I'm sharing this on your podcast because this is just silly. This is Shelley's brain running away. I have a goal in life to write, and man, if it could be a wish, it would be to have this published, to write children's books, like a series, which I have written. It's just sitting at home. It needs to be edited and touched up and then illustrated, which that's we're working on. But I would love to write a series of children's books. Then I would love to write a historical fiction novel for adults. But I would also like to sneak in there a young adult book or two. So pretty much every age group to cover it. It's a crazy goal, but I think it can be done. So that would be kind of where I hope to head. I do have an idea for a historical fiction novel in the works. But my main focus right now is wrapping up a book I am writing on Jeff Schaefer's life. And it's not so much an autobiography. It is in first person. I'm basically the ghostwriter. But it is not only your life, clearly, but how we arrive to where we are right now. What is impact investing and how does what we do with our time, talent, treasure affect our lives and the lives of others? What does this look like? How do we trade greed and fear for joy and freedom when it comes to money and our view of money? It's a big project. It's a fun project. And again, it cracks me up that my first initial freelance writing was in the world of investing. And I found that dry and challenging. And now my first book that I'm writing is right back at that same point, and yet with so much more to it, so much more, I hope, wisdom and understanding of this world and quite frankly, the beauty that lies within it. It is not dry and boring to me anymore. I can say that.
Yeah. And just for the record, that was not my prompting for this book. There was an outside individual, actually my coach. It wasn't me forcing you to write this book.
No, absolutely not.
Called to do it. So
correct.
It feels a little.
That was not a plug. Yes. Yeah. Let's make that clear. Sorry.
So maybe this next question you just answered, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyways. How are you trying to change the world? Just a small little question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Drop in the bucket. I would say, number one, it is through being a homemaker. Here's how I've always looked at this. If you have the gift of children, even if not, even just in marriage, and you have the opportunity to be a homemaker as the main focus as the career, I have always, always looked at home as the launching pad. That's what it is in my mind. I always look to you, Jeff, as the leader of the family, but we all do have roles. And for me, being a homemaker, it was kind of like being the CEO of that nook and cranny of our lives. What that meant to me and what it continues to, although again, we're in a transition phase, is that home is the launching pad where it should have been a place of peace, a non-chaos place, a place where our family, our kids, you are refueled to rest, to eat well, to feel like that anyone that's going to walk into this house comes back rejuvenated, not drained, to go out and do the good work that you're called to do. So my job has been to create that space. It's not, again, not a perfect place, but I hope it's an invigorating yet peaceful place to equip those that live in our home to go out and do the good work. I think that I'm changing the world, or I hope I have at least contributed by creating a place that allows growth for that. And now as we shift into where we are becoming empty nesters, that home is less need of equipment. However, I do still love having a full table of people gathered around, good food, good conversation. So I hope that the doors will always be open for that, whether it's our kids or not, whether it's friends, new friends, neighbors, whatever that may be. I do want the home used for that. Secondly, it would be through words, clearly through books. They have to say a lot. And they, you know, whether it's a children's book through the illustrations and the writing and the quick idea of what the story is telling, a nonfiction book, historical fiction, it's not just entertainment. People pick up books to connect. They want to be able to read something that either jars them or brings tears to their eyes or taps into that emotion that's maybe been lost. Perhaps it's to read a book that you connect with and go, that's me. I get this section. This, to me, speaks to my heart. From that, I hope it's life-changing in that the words that I write bring life, bring new perspective, bring a connection that, again, then allows people to view life perhaps a little differently, be a little more motivated to do good things. And I don't know if that's a massive world changer, but for me, in my little world, that's my contribution.
I think that's powerful. I specifically think that you've done a phenomenal job, obviously, of making a house a home, but I think there's a lot still left to be done as it relates to words. Switching gears here, because obviously what we're doing on this podcast is talking about capital, stewardship, impact investing, and frankly, what you're doing, which is having a calling and following it. But let's switch to the capital side, which I know is probably not your deepest passion to be talking about money. When did you realize the power of capital? Totally wide open question. And then maybe describe that for us.
I believe in my life, looking back, there was not one big aha moment. If I were to look back and think through what does capital mean to me today? It began at a very young age, this awareness to me of money and the power behind it. Being raised in the home that I was, I look back extremely grateful in the fact that I have my Russian immigrant grandparents who told stories all throughout my childhood of their life in Russia and what that was like in the 30s and 40s. And as we all know from history, it was horrific. They were both extremely poor. They would go 3 days without food at times. I mean, all of that, it could go on forever. When they immigrated over here to the United States, my papa got an all-night factory job in a paper mill. He always worked the night shift. And my grandmother cleaned houses and then was also a homemaker. So my mother never knew what it was like to be even middle class. Like, they were poor. And Papa, unfortunately, he was quite a character, believed what he was told in the factory, that the quickest way to make money is through gambling here in America. He jumped in on that. And by the time it was the late 50s, early 60s, I believe they were somewhere in the realms of $25,000 in debt. So my grandmother took this on, and that's a whole nother story, but they end up climbing out of that debt. But it was a huge burden to the family, clearly. You take the other side, which is my daddy, who grew up on a farm. And as we know, farming is not a guarantee of big money ever. It's a lot of faith and hard work. He learned the beauty of hard work almost to a point of workaholism. Thank God, not that piece. So again, money to him, he never knew what it was like to have a ton of money ever. And he, in fact, was the first to go to college. He broke the mold. He decided he didn't want to stay on the family farm. And so off he went, as far as getting a PhD even. So this was huge and monumental in his life, although he's the most humble guy when it comes to this. He doesn't talk much about it. But to him, it wasn't even to make tons of money. He just wanted to expand his horizons, so to speak. So as my parents got married and the way they raised my brother and I, money was not the hyper-focus. Money was talked about, but in a disciplinary way, not a harsh disciplinary way, but in a way of, how would I put this? It would be, money is a gift. Money is earned. And money is not meant to be an idol. And I clearly remember this just through the way they handled it, through the stories of their childhood. And Daddy did start making decent money. I mean, more than he ever grew up with, more than my mom ever did. But the way that they handled it, it was quite interesting as I look back now. We knew how much Daddy made. They would talk about it. It wasn't this private idol that you, like, it's taboo to talk about. It was, your dad's worked hard. Oh my goodness, guys, we would have family dinners and Dad would come home and hand Mom the bonus check. And it would be, oh my goodness, we need to give thanks to God for this. Take a look at what just landed on our plate today. And so I would see these checks. And again, we're not talking obscene amounts of money, but it was decent and it was great. So for me, it was celebrated. And then what we would do as a family is talk about where we would be giving it away, or we're going to put this in the bank. And Dad would mention that it's making whatever interest or whatever. I didn't know a lot about investing and Dad didn't go into deep conversation about that, but it was never taboo. It was never unknown and it wasn't untouchable. It was a gift and it was earned. And then what you do with it matters. I was also raised under the premise that if you don't have the money for whatever you're buying, a car, even so far as a house, don't buy it. Like that, it was just simple, clear. Yeah, whatever you have, you manage it well. And if you don't have it, you don't need it. So it was very simplistic, but I look back now and there was beauty in those words. This idea of capital and what it means to me, I would say that our capital, whatever you have, is truly a gift, and what you do with it matters. My parents were able to clean up the way they were both raised as far as money goes and not having enough to having plenty, but I also know they gave a ton away. They invested in people. And to me, I look back and they are examples of holding it loosely. So that's where it begins. It's just the slow drip from both sides of the family into the way I was raised that gives me my perception.
Appreciate you sharing those thoughts. And obviously, for a second, let me go to what you started to talk about as you now switch to stewardship, which you alluded to. How do you think about stewardship?
Okay, stewardship. To me, again, it's what we talk about in our own home. To me, that encompasses our time, our talents, and our treasures, and what we do with those matters. I'll come back to being a homemaker. I look at our home as one of our treasures, which needs to be used in our stewardship. So a home is not just ours. It's not ours to tuck away and hold it tightly and say, you know, this is just for us. That's an open door policy. It's an open table policy. And it's to share what God has given us and to give back. That goes with the talents, whatever God gifts us with, whether it's my writing or your entrepreneurship or whatever you might have. Again, it's not a self-serving purpose. The talent is the same as the money. So to me, stewardship means opening your eyes to what you've been given and open-handedly using it that way. It's not a closed-fisted proposition. To me, it's an open-handed deal. And there's so much freedom in that. And it clears up a lot of fear, clears up a lot of greed, clears up a lot of selfishness, quite frankly, when you realize that this thing can be taken away in a heartbeat. We all know, I mean, we lived through how many stock market crashes here or there. The one I mentioned earlier with my dad, 08. I mean, we could go down the line and you go, gosh, we have no control over this. So think through the way I was raised, the way that you view money, Jeffrey, and just in our marriage has just continued to teach me that it is a gift and you hold it very loosely. And through those open palms, you go make a difference with it.
Now we're going to have fun here with a question that, as you know, I struggle with, like, what's your favorite movie? What's your favorite color? So this is not meant to be in that context. If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
Well, that's loaded.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, gosh. One. Oh.
Yeah, you can throw in two if you want.
Oh, thanks.
Yep.
Just in my own life, like personal goals, I already mentioned it. It would be exhilarating to be published as a children's author, a young adult author, and an adult historical nonfiction author. I got a lot of work to do to get there. But that would be a dream that, again, if I could be producing books in all genres that could hit at the hearts of our culture today and bring some joy and light in a very dark time, that would bring a thrill. That would be one. I mean, I have many others, but
you give us one more.
Big, huge dream would be for Common Good Capital to really flourish in a way that is so impactful. And that sounds so cheesy, but it is so true because I know the passion and the work going into this. But to tack onto that, I just think it'd be a kick if our kids joined in that in a few years after college and kind of caught the dream. And it seems like our son Nick has a bit of a passion behind it already, which has got my brain going. Wouldn't that be amazing if it became a family business?
Well, thank you for the plug. I know that's not...
We might just abolish this whole podcast.
That's what's in your heart. But I don't normally comment on people's dreams, obviously, because I'm not in that position.
Yes.
I kind of feel like I'm in a little position to at least comment on part of this answer for you. And just even as I was listening to you 20 minutes ago describe the influence of your grandparents, all the way from being in Russia, which you didn't talk about, getting taken to work camps in Germany, your mom then being born in Germany, and then they come here to the U.S., and you just mentioned the story about Papa getting caught up in gambling. That could be a phenomenal story to communicate to people, especially at this given time, given some of the tug-of-war you have between socialism and communism.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we've forgot some of the past. You have some of those real-life experiences in ways that most people kind of don't even think they happen.
No. Well, in fact, I was talking with a friend about it the other day. It's, you know, this whole idea of socialism bubbling up here in the United States. And it was, how did we get here? And I was just thinking, well, I grew up, I mean, countless hours with my grandparents telling these stories. That's how I would go to bed. When we would go visit him at their house in Southern Illinois, I looked forward to bedtime, which, you know, as a kid, that's unusual. But that's because my grandma would come in and tuck me in and I would just say, tell me your stories until I would fall asleep. So she would. She would sit at the edge of the bed, rub my feet, and tell me her stories in her thick accent. Or you could snag her any time of the day or Papa and say, tell me stories. And they would. So they're just deep in me. And I heard about socialism, communism, what it was like to actually live it out. So what I was telling my friend the other day, so my Papa died a few years ago. He was in his early 90s. Well, he's part of that last generation that went through there. The stories are literally dead. They're not spoken of live. And there's a generation gap. You know, part of me in this even historical fiction book that I'm working on in my head has a lot to do with them and their story. Because when the people that have experienced it have passed away and the words are not fresh in our minds, they quickly become silent, right? In their own way. And, you know, my parents didn't, grandparents did not write things down. They told stories. They were verbal. And so we do have videos and stuff of them. But I long to get that out there through words just because it's become a silent story. And, you know, there's a lot of historical fiction books out there about World War II and all, written beautifully. I mean, I love most of them I've read. This would be very personal and extremely true. And I think truth needs to be resurrected in this area.
You know, as you're talking, I couldn't help but, you know, I'm a visual guy. Mm-hmm. And so I picture the word common good in the middle. And forget about right or left from a political standpoint. So let's just say on one side of this common good is capitalism. Mm-hmm. And the other side is, let's just say, socialism. And it's interesting. I think both are trying to define what common good means, because mm-hmm. it could really go one mm-hmm. way or the other. And so looking forward to continue fleshing, what does common good mean? Recognizing that capitalism has strengths and weaknesses,
yep.
socialism has strengths and weaknesses, and how do you come to a common mm-hmm. understanding that is good and beautiful mm-hmm. for the word common good? As somebody who is deeply cares about words, we need yeah. to try to articulate that better.
Amen.
Thank you so much. We appreciate having you here today, sharing your insights. I know you're, you know, it's not you to get on and tell the world your story, but actually I think it's a great thing for you, because that's hopefully what you will be doing
yeah.
going forward with your writing. So thanks for sharing a little about who you are.
It was fun.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.